The Elephant in the Boa Constrictor. It was a quiet winter evening. I had settled down by the fireplace with my grandson Eli to read him Antoine de Saint-Exupéry's classic, The Little Prince. We were just starting, reading the first page, where the 6-year-old boy, strongly impressed by a book about the jungle, makes a drawing. To him, the picture was clear. It's a boa constrictor digesting an elephant. How surprised he was when the grown-ups did not see what he had drawn. All they saw was a hat. He had to make a second drawing so they'd be able to understand. Only when the boy met the little prince did he find someone who looked at his first drawing with the same eyes, seeing it was an elephant in a boa. I had found my metaphor. Saint-Exupéry's drawings visualize how much our mind can limit what we see. Once we remove the constraints, we will see what is there, an elephant being digested by a boa constrictor. I grew up on a sugar beet farm in southern Utah in a Mormon community called Glenwood, where most of the no more than 200 men, women, and children were my aunts, uncles, or cousins. As the mountains of Utah enclosed our valley, Mormon rules destined our lives. Life was preordained, and my assignment would be to become a missionary. For 2 years, I would go wherever my church would send me. You don't say no when God is calling you. I was a little boy when first doubts arose. An ear infection had become chronic, and pain had been punishing me with no relief, until my Uncle Arnold broke a Mormon rule. Even though smoking was strictly forbidden, he was a smoker. He blew the smoke from his cigarette into my inflamed ears, and each time, over more than a year, achieved what no other treatment had accomplished. It eased the pain, and it was entirely outside my mindset. I started to wonder about the world around me. I experienced a growing desire to explore. What else might there be in this world that my immature mind knew nothing about? I questioned what in my world should have been a given. Curiosity was the first step, and soon I was sure I wanted to get out of Utah. When I was 17, I saw my chance. I joined the Marines and, as they say, saw the world. The door into this new world truly opened when, for the first time, I began to read books. It was a world where everything seemed possible. Now, looking back these many years later, I can see that my curious mind carried me through many adventures, through being a Marine, through my radical period as student president of the University of Utah, when I fought for free speech and civil rights, my studies at Harvard and Cornell, my time as editor of the Great Books Foundation, working for Robert Hutchins and Mortimer Adler, and my 3-year cycles in the corporate world, which I left whenever my learning curve began to flatten. My years in politics instructed me in the art of the possible, from running for Congress at the age of 25 to my time in Washington, where President Kennedy installed me as Assistant Commissioner of Education. After his assassination in November 1963, I stayed on in Washington, becoming assistant to John Gardner when he was Secretary of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and eventually working for the White House, doing special projects for President Lyndon Johnson. In July 1964, President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act to eliminate the last vestiges of injustice in America. A great bundle of legislation followed. In 1965, I was asked to find out what impact all of his great society legislation would have on the country. A fascinating obligation, but it seemed impossible to find out what was going on at the time, let alone what the impact of the legislation on America's future would be. In spite of this compelling consideration, I could no longer bear Johnson's obsession about winning the war in Vietnam at any cost. I left the White House for an offer from IBM and became an assistant to Tom Watson, the chairman. In April 1967, Detroit erupted in race riots. That summer, black power advocates called for an armed revolution, and riots swept across the country. President Johnson rushed 4,700 paratroopers into Detroit, which had been nearly paralyzed by race riots. The turbulence was fueled the next year by the assassinations of Martin Luther King Jr. and Bobby Kennedy. America's cities were burning, and companies did not know what was going on and what they should do. This instability fed my hunt for a mechanism to monitor the transition the country was going through. How could I really see where America was headed?